hard on fitness and the running game.
That's what kind of led me to want this dream of being a racing driver.
There's no point in talking about anything except standards of excellence.
We will deal with the Tailteann Cup if we're in it, and we'll certainly give it every bit of respect.
There's no feeling that beats playing for Ireland.
Up the LFL. My God, I'm going to do everything that is possible to bring us there.
This is Sportsbeat Extra on Beat.
Good evening and welcome along to Sportsbeat Extra. I'm Andy, and here's what's coming up on the show this evening. We'll be looking at the swimming. The World Championships has seen Ireland bring its first ever medal home thanks to Daniel Whiffen's incredible performance in the 800 metres freestyle. But first, I take a look at Gaelic football in the southeast region. At the moment, Waterford, Wexford, Carlow and Tipperary all find themselves in Division 4 of the Allianz National Football League, with football in Kilkenny really on the ropes also. Is there anything that can be done? And why has it taken such a dramatic turn in the last decade? I'm delighted to be joined by Carlow's Kevin Regan to chat more about Gaelic football in the southeast.
Sportsbeat Extra.
Beat 102-103.
So, Kev, I suppose, you know, we were talking about it off air. Waterford, Carlow, Tipperary, Wexford, all down in Division 4. And then, you know, Kilkenny kind of, I suppose, hanging on to football by a thread in general. Why do you think it's gone such a sorry state down in the southeast? Is there anything that can be done to bring it back?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose it is a peculiar one that, you know, you have so many southeast-based counties down in Division 4 at the minute. And I suppose it's interesting when you see Carlow man Peter Fortune on the Sunday game last week and speaking very well, I might add, about maybe the state of hurling in the country, that I suppose to a far lesser extent, not to be drawn a like-for-like comparison. But is there a bit of an epidemic down here, you'd wonder? And I suppose, having racked the brain a little bit, the small bit of a brain that we'd have, the only thing I can come up with is that a lot of these counties are trying to promote both codes. Like, if you look at Carlow, Laois, Tipp, Wexford, you know, Waterford. I mean, Waterford's probably maybe the exception out of those that I've called out. But they are trying to make strides. We know that hurling is number one down there. But when you put such a push on trying to promote both codes, I wonder, is that the downside of it, and is that why we see so few hurling teams? I mean, I'm not so sure, but like, if you look at it at the minute, Leeds from our top of the table, they don't have much of a push on the hurling side of things. And then to counter that, if you want to be fair and reasonable, like, Longford have no wins from their first two games, and they don't really make a push on the hurling side of things either, or haven't for a little while. It's interesting. I don't know, is it coincidence? Is there a little bit more to it? But, you know, that's where the counties are now, and they're going to have to find a way out of it.
Absolutely. It's, I suppose, from my own experience of it, being a Wexford man, I look back at that year in 2008 and Wexford going on the run all the way to the All-Ireland semi and losing out to Tyrone. And I suppose, you know, Jason Ryan was there and there was a kind of a buzz around for a few years. They were consistently getting to the Leinster final and, you know, gave Dublin a few good games. And there was no, I suppose, kind of kick on from there. Which, as you say, maybe is that kind of the part of the problem, is that when the football maybe starts coming a bit, they're still trying to balance it out with hurling as well.
Yeah, I mean, Carlow and Wexford probably have a little bit in common in the sense that there's a lot of players that are actually good enough to play county at both codes, but we know now that it's not possible to do so. Sure, look at Lee Chin, fabulous footballer and Wexford's best hurler. I think that might be the disadvantage, and we've seen the club stuff, and I think Wexford might be going back again when they went to play one code in front of the other. On the club side of things, you know, it seemed to work pretty good in Carlow, but now they're looking to maybe have a change on that, I think, on the Wexford side. Like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of good players come and go at a particular time as well, and that was a fine Wexford side. You know what I mean? It was an exceptional Wexford side. Did they capitalise on it? I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, they won an under-21 in 2010. I know that's not today or yesterday. Have they been pushing on since at underage? I mean, I'm not so sure. They're in a group from a minor point of view with Carlow now this year and Wicklow, which they'll probably fancy their chances in. But it definitely is interesting. And, you know, I don't know. I just don't know. Is it down to that dual status why teams end up down here? But, like, it's not an easy division to get out of either, for anyone. And I mean, if you're looking at it objectively after the first two rounds, to see Longford there with no points to their name, you know, after suffering defeats to Laois and to Tipperary, like, I mean, that would be the standout thing so far. So, like, it is a bit of a minefield down there. You don't know where the results are going to come from. And, you know, a lot of people feel it's a very hard division to get out of.
You're almost playing a derby, you know, every couple of weeks as well, with so many of the southeast counties involved. you've got Carlow with two wins and Waterford with two losses, and then you know, Tipperary and Wexford with one win each. And I suppose, does it kind of beg the question on a wider picture, is Gaelic football just not as attractive anymore? You know, we've heard plenty of talk about it, I suppose, even in the bigger games at the end of the All-Irelands and stuff. Is there anything that we can maybe do across the region to start bringing the love for Gaelic football back into it?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one. I'm not so sure, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not that long ago that Tipperary won a Munster Championship. You're looking at 3 or 4 years ago, and, you know, that came off being very competitive at underage level, winning Munster Championships at underage and stuff like that. And obviously, a couple of those Tipperary players have stepped away. They've gone out foreign, and some just retired and different things. I don't know. I think there is a lot of genuine hard work being done in a lot of these counties, and they are all looking to make that particular step. I feel, you know, a lot of people brush over the lack of consistency, I suppose, in the league. And that's what you want. You want a consistent run of games. I mean, you can put a few of those together. I mean, that's the difference between getting over it and not getting over it. Mick Yeo, a contributor to the Left Wing Back podcast, actually said it on this week's show. When you get a bit of consistency, that's all you can hope for in Division 4 in terms of getting out of it. And now, Tipperary in particular, I suppose, wouldn't have expected to lose to Carlow, especially in Semple Stadium in round one. Now, would they have been expected to go and beat Longford in round two? I'm not so sure, but they went and did it. So they're probably the prime example of, you know, how, I suppose, unpredictable this whole thing is, and how true that statement is about consistency and trying to put that together. And that's why this weekend's game with Carlow and Laois in particular, with both of them on 4 points coming off the back of two wins on the same trajectory, like, that's a make or break thing nearly already after three rounds, you could say.
Absolutely. As you say, it's a tough one to get out of. And then I suppose if you do manage to get out of it, pushing on then to that next level, because there probably is, there's a real discrepancy, I suppose, between the teams that are knocking around down in Division 4 and then, you know, up into 3 and 2, the standard of football gets a lot higher. So I suppose, is it a case that you just, as you say, you get the consistency, but then bringing it to the next level then is a real challenge as well?
That's it. It's not only getting out of Division 4, but it's staying in Division 3. And, you know, Carlow got out of it in 2018 and came straight back down in 2019. Very unlucky to do so, I might add. And it was Laois to put the nail in that particular coffin as well, ironically. But that's the whole thing. I mean, if you can stay up there for a few years, you're playing that, you know, slightly higher level. You're getting better quality games, of course. And it must count for something when you go into the Tarleton Cup. And Carlow have done pretty good in the Tarleton Cup in particular over the last couple of years. They've, you know, taken down a few big guns in it. But you can't help but feel in general that most of these teams will be far better primed if they were in, you know, Division 3 going into that particular part of it. Because with Division 3, it's not too dissimilar in a lot of cases. I mean, there's a lot of teams that yo-yo up and down. But if you look at the top two or three teams, I mean, they're consistently there. They've been in Division 2, perhaps just before that, but they're there, thereabouts all the time. And they're a little level above maybe the, I suppose, the bottom four or five teams in Division 3. And really, that's where you're looking to be, and try stay there for a little while, that when you're bringing in these new players, they're exposed to that higher quality game, so to speak, which sounds a bit bizarre when it's only one division, but it does make a difference. And, you know, the proof will be in the pudding.
You touched on it earlier, Kev, which was a good point about, you know, that the kind of, I suppose, the split calendar in the club scene in a lot of the southeast counties, where you maybe have all the hurling is first and the football after. And you often kind of find that, you know, obviously you have your pre-season and your fitness and all that comes into it as well, but lads are probably hurling away for several months before the hurling championship gets going, and the football maybe sits on the back burner a little bit. Is that maybe something that needs to be looked at as well, as, you know, potentially to restructure it again, where you have that mix and, you know, lads do have the football in hand a bit more?
Look, I'm not so sure, because, right, I mean, Waterford obviously adopted something similar, and I'm open to correction on that, but I believe they did over the past couple of years. And Ballygunner had a massive gap, open to correction on this, somewhere in the region of 8 to 10 weeks before their Munster Club Championship game. Now, look what they did in the Munster, and they were in a squeak of getting to an All-Ireland final. Carlow would have had the same gap, and Munster Rangers lost out to All-Auckland Gaels. So, like, I'm not quite sure how much of a difference or how little of a difference it actually makes. The year before last, Carlow's St Mullins played Wexford's Ferns in the Leinster Club Championship. They both had an equal amount of time leading up to it, an awful amount of time, in fact. And I don't know. I mean, there's pros and cons to all these things. I get what you're saying, I suppose. Maybe from a hurling point of view in particular, I think in a lot of these counties, the hurling has been played first. And that would mean then, well, should the hurling not be at more of a disadvantage when it comes to the league? And you see Carlo with 2 wins from 2. Okay, Wexford, you know, they have a couple of draws to their name, but they're competitive. So maybe you'd be looking at this and saying, well, if football is actually finishing later in the year, well, then where are Waterford right now, or where are Wexford right now in terms of consistency? In any respect, I suppose it should be more of an advantage to the court that's played second in every county, because lads have that bit of football a little bit sooner to the inter-county action. So it is an interesting one, like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we start off with the Waterford game, then this weekend they're at home to Longford, and as you mentioned, maybe a kind of target for them is to just get back competing. They, you know, they've been hammered by Carlo by 11 points and Leitrim by 15 points in the first two games. So they'll really be kind of hoping to, you know, put in a performance at least anyway against Longford this weekend.
Yeah, they will. And I suppose having home advantage is probably something there too. Now you're looking at it from the opposition's point of view, and they've, surprisingly, as we said earlier, come in with no points into this. Like, are Waterford looking at that then and thinking, well, Stroke are in the same position as us, why can't we give it a go? I mean, what a lift that would be if Waterford were to pull off a result there. And, like, you know, the one thing you have to do in Division 4 is make yourself very hard to beat, and especially when you're on home turf. Like, I'm looking at, obviously, the first round and Leitrim obviously beating them down there and beating them so well. Like, you don't really know what to expect when you're going to the first round, and Leitrim are top of the table, so they're obviously moving well. Waterford now have a couple of games under their belt. So the question is, what can they learn in those couple of games? Yes, morale might be a little bit low, but at the same time, well, look, lads, we might as well have a go at this here now, and let's see how far we can push ourselves. And I don't see why they couldn't pull out a result. And I do think they'll pull out a result somewhere. Don't be under any illusions. That's Waterford's thing for years and always has been. So, I mean, I expect them to be a bit more competitive in that. Can they get a result? I'm not so sure, but I think they will come out all guns blazing.
Yeah, hope so. And the other three then, Carlo are away to Laois, Tip make the trip to London, and then Wexford heading up to Leitrim to take on the table toppers at the moment. Three tough games there as well on paper.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Tip are after getting the kick in the backside after round one, and that win over Longford is definitely after putting a pep into their step. You know, going over to London, it's so difficult to get a result over there. And London are a banana skin as well. Like, Wexford, in fairness, they did get their result over there against them. And I think Tip will as well. I mean, again, look, I mean, once bitten, twice shy. I don't think they'll slip up on that one. Carlo and Laois, well, look, come here. Laois have had an Indian sign over Carlo for a long, long time. I think 1988 was the last competitive win Carlo had. Carlo beat them in the O'Byrne Cup in 2002. But look, it's a pre-season tournament, so you don't really class that as such. Like, so that's a long, long time since Carlo last tasted victory over Laois. I do think Carlo have a bit about them. I mean, obviously I'm from there, it sounds a little bit biased or whatever. But they're looking good this year. Plenty of pace. Shackles will be off, come up to a Moore Park, all the pressure on Laois. I think they just might shade it this time. I just have a feeling they might. And obviously being locally biased, I hope they do. Yeah. But from Wexford's point of view, like, I mean, they looked like they were moving pretty well a few weeks back. Okay, they've had a bit of a setback now after losing out to Laois. But no, I expect them to go well this weekend again.
Be kind of small increments, I suppose, is really the target, isn't it, for the South East Counties? Start get that little bit of momentum going and hopefully, you know, bring things back up to a competitive level over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, well, set realistic targets. Like, I mean, like, even from, it sounds, I know I'm picking out Waterford as the example, but if they're rocking up and saying, lads, let's go Division 4 this year, like, is that realistic? Is that reasonable? Like, I'm not so sure, given where they've been for some time. So when you set, and I don't know what they've set, by the way, for what it's worth, you have to set something that's achievable and ambitious at the same time and challenge yourself. And if you don't do that, I mean, you're not going to learn a whole lot and you're going to be content and you're going to get nowhere. When you get your house in order, you have all these lads focusing on the one thing. I mean, there's an awful lot to be said for it. And all it takes is one guy to actually deviate away from what you're trying to do, and the whole thing just goes downhill and you may forget about it. Once you have that, I mean, you can achieve anything. So, you know, it all depends on how ambitious these lads are and how determined and, I suppose, how together they are in that journey.
Sports Beat Extra.
Yes, hopefully the South East Counties can get the Gaelic football back up to some competitive level in the very near future. And we've got to touch on this. Ireland's first ever medal at the World Championships in the swimming went to Armaz Daniel Whiffen during the week. He claimed gold in the 800-metre freestyle in Doha, and he is set to go also in the 1500 metres final tomorrow on Sunday. That's about 4:15 Irish time. But here is the moment, the closing moments of that thrilling 800 metre freestyle final that saw Daniel take gold for Ireland for the first time ever.
700 metres, just two laps to go. Can Paltrinieri pull off a shocker again? The lead's only 0.3 of a second. And here they go. This is where he can get his look. Can he build this lead on Riffin? Or will Riffin become the world champion for the first time?
I think Riffin's looking stronger. Paltrinieri leading. Riffin it is, who's just behind him. And then it's Winnington trying to hold off the challenge there from Schwartz and Rozovsky as well. But Whippen, the Irishman, has taken the lead now. As they've got 50 to swim, it's Whippen in front. Paltrinieri about 0.2 of a second back. Winnington still holding out Schwartz. It's going to be a great battle for the bronze medal. So, but it looks like it's going to be a gold medal to Ireland. Less than 25 to swim now. Daniel Whippen. He was fourth in Fukuoka. He was eighth in Budapest. He's done a lot in the last couple of years. The 22-year-old Irishman, he takes the gold medal in the 800 metres. Daniel Whippen is a world champion, and the Irish fans are delighted.
What an absolutely amazing performance from the 22-year-old Daniel Whippen, Ireland's first ever world championship medalist, and a gold at that. And hopefully he can put in just as good a performance in Sunday's 1500 metre final. And we look forward to catching up with Daniel for next week's show.
This is Sportsbeat Extra.
Well, it was a huge night at the RSC in Waterford last night, as Waterford FC took to the Premier Division of the Electricity League once again. They took on Damien Duff's Shelburne last night. It finished 1-1. With the Waterford side showing that they are definitely not just there to make up the numbers, and a draw with last year's fourth placed Shelburne will do no harm for the confidence of each and every member of the Waterford FC squad. So Keith, I suppose, look, an encouraging start, 1-1 with fourth placed Shelburne, you know, a top four finish for them last year, no shame then in taking a point from the opening game. But what did you make of it overall, the 90 minutes at the RSC?
I think you're right. It is a positive start for us. I think it's important to get off the mark in the opening game. So a little bit disappointed that we didn't win the game, naturally enough, having led for 60 minutes or so, for a little bit longer than that, actually. But I suppose Shells did come into the game more in the second half. They had more possession in the second half. Maybe a draw is a fair result. When you consider, like you said, Shells were, they're a team that have been together a long time. You know, a good couple of years now under Damien, and they're supremely well organised. They're difficult to beat. They had the second highest defensive record. Second best defensive record in the Premier Division last year, so they're a tough nut to crack. But we got an early goal. I thought we were on the front foot in the first half and played the game, with good tempo, good intensity, and I thought we gave a good account of ourselves for the opening night, which is what we wanted to do. But listen, it's a start. Won't get too carried away one way or the other. But we're glad to get off the mark, with a result to start our campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice to have something to build on. I suppose an electric start for Melissa Asamoah. You know, he only joined kind of just over a week ago or so from Fleetwood Town, but to get a goal inside the third minute, I suppose it really kind of ignited the crowd. Not that they needed much. They were hopping before the game, but a great start for him. And I suppose he gives you that real kind of electric pace that is so hard to deal with.
Yeah, him and Connor Parsons give us that threat, and we've got a number of quick players within the squad. So it was good for Melis to open his account on his full league debut for the club. Obviously, he is quick. He's going to give us the option in terms of counter attacking, transitioning from defence to attack. It's going to be a case where Melis and Connor with the pace down the size that we've got will will be a real outlet for us. We hope. But there's more to the game than that. Like, we played a game on our terms in the first half. Barry Bagley and Niall O'Keefe, I thought, were really influential in the middle of the park. You know, we scored a great goal. Sam Sargent recognised the counter-attack was on, and a delivery from him to Melis down the sides. And, you know, the goal was well taken. And obviously, you know, he outlined there in that moment, you know, what terrific pace that he's got. So, and the threat that he can potentially be. Like I said, I thought we played with good intensity, good energy in the first half. We're first to most things. And throughout the team, I thought there was some good displays.
You touched on Barry Bagley's performance there as captain. How important is it to have someone like that? He really just leads by example from start to finish, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's a great challenge for Barry to, because he was very good for us last year in the First Division, and there's a big difference now as we step into the Premier Division. So he's just a great kid, good boy around the place. You know, he typifies everything and that we want in a skipper. He works hard for the team. You know, he's like a sponge, takes everything on board, you know. And he's a really, really talented boy. He's a really good player. And we've seen that last night, and I was delighted for him to lead the team the way that he did last night. So the boys, he's got lots of credit and lots of respect in the dressing room. The boys, respect Barry, you know, on and off the pitch. You know, he's just a really good guy and, a gem of a player for us to be working with. And I'm delighted for him to mark his, like I said, captaincy of the team with a positive result last night.
Yeah, for sure. And look, we probably, I suppose, over the course of the 90 minutes, a draw was probably the fair result. But you were probably disappointed with the manner in which you conceded the goal. And is that maybe a little bit of the difference between, you know, coming up from the First Division into the Premier Division? You're just going to get punished for those kind of things, aren't you?
Yeah, it's not particularly a good goal to concede. You know, Shells didn't really have to work that too hard to score the goal. I think, you know, if teams are going to get goals against us, they have to be well worked goals, or they have to work really hard to get them. But I don't think that was the case last night, so we'll be disappointed with that. I don't think there's a huge fix in terms of what we need to do, but we need to be better in those moments. Of course, we do. We need to control the game maybe a little bit more at that particular point, you know. And it's a poor goal to concede. And at this level, yeah, you will get punished for those moments. But there was lots of good aspects to our play too. Maybe with them down to 10 men, you know, we could have went for the game a little bit more. Open the night, all that type of stuff. You know, a lot riding on it. You know, maybe we could have been a little bit braver. For the final 10 minutes, certainly of the extra time, you know, Shell's been down to 10 men. Maybe we could have gone for a little bit more, attacked the game a little bit more. But listen, I'm not complaining. Disappointed that we didn't concede the goal the way we did. Didn't maybe hang on for the 3 points. Hang on, probably the wrong phrase to use. But, you know, we boys come off the bench that made a good impact last night. Romeo came on, was really good. Ben McCormick comes on. You know, Grant Horton making his debut to make a tactical change there at the back. We felt that we needed to subtly change things a little bit there to, you know, Ryan Burke getting the yellow card. Ryan's been very good for us. We've brilliant in pre-season. One of our leaders in the dressing room, you know, felt, you know, him being on the yellow card, maybe we need to adjust things a little bit there. But like I said, it's hard to be too critical of the performance last night. Yes, we're disappointed with the goal that we conceded. Yes, we're disappointed with aspects of our play. Maybe we needed to keep the ball a little bit more when we're under pressure, you know, to have a spell in possession, to take the sting out of the opposition, to maybe kill the game a little bit more. But these are things that we can learn over the course of the season. And the quicker we adapt, the quicker we learn, obviously, you know, hopefully we can start turning draws into results, into wins and all that type of stuff.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed. And then, just, I suppose, Keith, looking forward then just to the next couple of games, you've got two long trips up to Drogheda and to Galway. And how do you see those games going now that the lads are kind of, I suppose, they've had that first 90 minutes of playing a top quality side? Will it really give you the edge now and the confidence to, you know, believe in yourselves and drive it on from here?
I think, firstly, it's a completely different challenge this week against Drogheda. You know, the boys had home advantage last night, big crowd, sense of anticipation building up to the league campaign. You know, the real stuff starts now. Drogheda away is a really tough venue to go. You know, they're supremely well organised. They played particularly well last night in Derry and probably a little bit unlucky not to come away with something from a game. Derry is one of the toughest places to go in this league. Drogheda, like I said, was really well organised. Some very, very good players. Drogheda, you know, the pitch up there is tight. You know, it's a difficult place to go. One of the toughest venues in this country to go. And like I said, really difficult challenge for us. So we can't pat ourselves on the back too much for last night. We have to refocus now and get ourselves ready for a big week ahead, a big challenge ahead against Drogheda. A different challenge, a different set of challenges. But that's the beauty of being in Premier Division. And, you know, that's what we want.
Tracking sport across the southeast. Sports Beat Extra.
That's all I've got time for on today's Sportsbeat Extra. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Andy. This has been Sportsbeat Extra. And don't go anywhere because Beat Anthems is coming up right after this.